And the
podcast
begins with a song of rebellion.
How can this
podcast
be my life?
CD Burners.
Goodbye, James.
Hello, James.
Oh,
did you see the text I sent you?
No, I was on Do Not Disturb when we do this.
Before we start, I mean, we can talk about it. We
keep it in. Keep it in.
Look at that shit.
All right, hold on. Oh, yeah. No, I know. I know. I don't know how to close the toilet.
There's a button.
I like push the toilet down and it like forces it its way back up.
There's a button.
I know. It's on the side.
Okay. So, guys, there's a secret bathroom at work. And it used to just be really basic, and I first discovered it months ago, and it was like hidden away in the basement, and I was like, this is amazing, because the bathroom situation at this office is not that awesome. But I finally found like a private place.
Really funny of TJ to do, and like very like you to do to
yeah,
be like who, I found this like
I found a secret bathroom. So I found it, and then a couple weeks after that, it went under construction. Like, they were redoing this whole place. And that, I just went in there for the first time since they completed construction. And it is, like, the nicest bathroom in the entire world.
It's beautiful.
It's so fucking nice. And they have a bidet.
They have a
There's
bidet.
There's a bidet. The seat is warm. It's a warming seat. Like, it's so sick, dude.
Yeah, and there's like a, it's like a nice light color. Like there's like a light that comes up off
the thing
the
is that
toilet.
We can't tell anybody that it is here.
I know. Well, I mean, if Emo Knight listens to this podcast, which they don't.
Nobody does.
No, they won't listen to this. But like, yeah, it's like really, it looks like a, it's like a 5-star hotel bathroom.
It's
if
so
not nicer.
Sick. I sent Morgan a selfie. I was like, bro, the secret bathroom is crazy now.
I know. I come down here to bother everybody sometimes. Uh-huh. So it was definitely, like, I've used it. And I'm like, I don't know how to close the,
I did it forcefully. And then I realized there's a button, which is even better because then you don't have to touch the seat.
Yeah, it's awesome. And then, but I also didn't know how to, like, flush it either because there's, like, a button. It's, like, it's like super
I also couldn't figure out how to flush. And then I just closed the lid manually and then it flushed on its own.
Yeah, I don't know. Dude, you should have seen me in there. I was like waving my hand over the toilet. I was like, how do I do this? Fuck. I was like, how the fuck do I do this? I can't like, and there were people outside and I was like, it was full of piss.
Oh,
and
God.
I was like, dude, I can't like leave without this pissing. I was like, am I going to have to like scoop the piss out and put it in this, in the
beautiful
thing?
Sink?
Yeah. And I was like trying to like, I was like waving. I was like dancing around trying to be like, how the fuck do you flush this? And I was like, flush. Like I did everything. Yeah, I did not know how to do it. I had no idea how to do it. And then I finally saw the thing on the wall. It was like not a natural place to, you know, you use any bathroom. You're like, this is not, you know,
it's
got to be
more like Japanese style. It's got like the panel. God, it's so nice. All right, enough of that because we have a lot to say about this album. Rightfully so. Today we're talking about Jimmy Eat World, Bleed American. This album came out July 24th, 2001. Highest position on Billboard was number 31. And certified motherfucking platinum by the Diarrhea Association.
This album is, like, it's unbelievable.
Let's talk about the year. 2001.
I'm going to tell you a little story.
Let's
first.
Hear it.
I've been listening to this album since it came out. I forgot something, and a story popped into my head about when I first heard this album, well, song in particular. So it was about maybe 2000, maybe the end of 2000. I was at a house party, a giant house party in Tucson, Arizona, in a suburban cul-de-sac, and it was about 2:33 in the morning, and one of the guys, the drummer of The Blood, goes to me and a couple of my friends were wasted. He goes, hey, let's go out to the car. And we're like, what? What's happening? And we go out to the car and he has a fucking CD. We sit in the car and he puts the CD on and has one song on it. It's Bleed American. It was the first, you know, Jimmy Eat World at this point, like Clarity and Static Prevails are some of my favorite albums. Clarity's my favorite album of all time. I remember sitting in the back seat of like whatever, like some shitty Toyota Camry or whatever the fuck car it was, like with my friends and beers and with like the older cool kids. And I think Mike probably like got this from Mark Trombino because the Bled played with, or the Bled recorded with Mark Trombino, and it had not, it, you know, it was another maybe like 6 months before it was released. And I remember like hearing this for the first time. I remember hearing those like chords of how this album starts, and I was speechless. I was speechless, like remembering hearing this for the first time. Like the way I didn't.
See, I thought you were for sure going to say Sweetness.
No.
Because they did, in between Clarity and this album, they did a EP or album called Singles, and they put it out on Rama's label, mm-hmm. Big Recreation, Big Wheel Recreation.
Big Wheel Rec.
They purposely actually didn't include Sweetness on that. They actually leaked that on the internet. They put it on Napster.
Yeah.
And they just started seeding it out there in the world. And that stuck with people. Like, there were so many stories that, you know, in the videos that I watched, people getting super attached to the demo version of Sweetness. And since you were saying it was before the album was out, I thought for sure you were going to be like, I heard the Sweetness single.
I just remember it, like, there was that. It was a point. It was a definite point in my growing up. Mature, like phase, whatever. And you're like, where that changed me. I was like, this is everything. I wanted everything to sound like that opening riff of Bleed American. I had never heard anything that sounds like that. The way that it was catchy, but it was also like hard and off-putting with chords. And like, you know, it was also like a really special time, you know, that like I was like, what, like a junior in high school? And you're like in the, you know, like thinking that this is like a secret thing that like nobody's heard before. And you're listening to it with your friends and, you know, in like the summer of a high school party. It was just like a beautiful moment that I remembered. And I completely forgot until I started to like look up all the stuff from this album. It completely changed who I am. Like that opening riff to Bleed American, that whole song. The whole song, we listened to it, must have listened to it like 6 times in a row. And I remember nobody said anything. Like, I think everybody was just so blown away at this because it's not what Clarity sounds like. You know, no. It has bits of what Clarity sounds like. It has bits of what Static Prevail sounds like, but it is not that.
Clarity has bits. Clarity has songs, I think, that could be on Bleed American, but Bleed American doesn't have any songs that could be on Clarity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I would say that that's true. I you know, it's, but the thing is, it like sounds like Jimmy Eat World. Like it sounded like this is where they were like, we found our sound.
Right, and this is their fourth album. So they were fresh off of putting out Clarity on Capitol Records, and it was a flopita.
Which is crazy. But just, I guess it makes, you know, it makes sense.
They just weren't working it. I guess to back it up even further, they're was a whole sort of slew of major, like after Nirvana, major labels were like, okay, grunge is over, emo is next. And that's when they went out and they've signed bands like Lifetime and Mineral. And Jimmy was sort of part of that initial like, shit, Kurt's dead, grunge is over, let's grab the next thing. And then the label didn't really do anything for Clarity. It just kind of like fizzled out. They sold 50,000 copies and then they were dropped. And then Jimmy Eat World was like, fuck you guys. We are going to blow the fuck up. We're going to make the best album possible and we're going to sell it to the highest bidder. They never doubted what was happening because they were actually out there on the road touring and building the fan base. Capitol was doing fucking nothing. So they saw it. They saw that they had momentum. And they were going back into the studio. They started making this album with Mark Trombino. And Mark Trombino believed in it so much that he did it for free.
Yeah, he believed that like he would get the residual, you know, like
he was like, I'll get paid back. You guys will get a record deal. I believe in this project enough to the point where I will work for free right now. And he was right. And they started drumming up all this attention. Like they would invite people over to the studio. All these labels were coming by literally like every day when they were making the album and they were playing them songs.
Yeah, which is like such a cool thing to be like, they had to, they're like, people are knocking down doors to be like, we'll do this now. No, we'll take this now because they, you know, I think that That being said, is like, I think the A&Rs and the labels felt the same way that I did when I heard that song.
Yeah,
like they were just like, we
this
all,
is life changing.
Yeah, we all felt the same. And, yeah. you know, it was really awesome of Mark Trombino, you know, he was acted, you know, way more than a producer to be like, I think you guys should put out some of these albums on like, or songs on Napster. Like, I believe in this so much, you know, like he did a lot of stuff for this album. He did a lot of really amazing shit that we'll talk about, but he reworked the middle, wasn't supposed to be on the album,
yeah.
and he reworked it. And, you know, just a thing about that that I heard was that, like, the middle is for Jimmy Eat World, listening to their first three albums, it's a simple song.
Well, why don't we come back to the
All
middle?
Right, let's come back to
like the order of the singles.
Because I have
All right, so they're in the studio. They're getting all this label interest. Drive Through, they wanted to talk to Drive Through, but Drive Through was like under MCA, and then they came down and they were like, yeah, if this comes out, it's coming out on MCA, because this is like a massive pop record. Like, this is bigger than Drive Through. And then there were all these other labels. Capitol even came back into the picture, and they were like, we should sign you back to Capitol.
Were they like, fuck
no, and they're like, yeah, we'll entertain it if you give us all of our masters back and zero out our balance and give us like a 7-figure deal.
Sick.
And they were like, well, we can't do that.
Baller move.
Yeah.
Baller move by
super sick.
Baller move.
They ended up signing with DreamWorks, which is interesting because you think of DreamWorks and it's like just a movie studio.
Yeah, I never really thought of DreamWorks as like a...
But DreamWorks had hits.
Yeah, I never thought of it.
Hits out the fucking ass. They had Last Resort. They had Alien Ant Farm, Smooth Criminal.
Which, by the way, way better than the original. It's few and far between, but that Alien... Dude, my Annie Walters, the first girlfriend I talk about here all the time,
yeah.
She wanted to be a singer, you know what I mean? And that was like the first song as a band she like recorded and played
she
live.
She covered Smooth Criminal?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Dude, yeah.
But yeah, they also had Hanging by a Moment. Remember that song?
Yeah, of course.
Huge. So they weren't looking for a hit. And I think that was also like appealing to Jimmy Eat World because they were like, oh, DreamWorks isn't putting pressure on us to have like one single, even though there's literally like five hit singles off this album. They were like, they're going to support us as a full band. And we get to keep touring and like growing our fan base. It seems like a good fit for us holistically. And they ended up doing a 7-figure deal with DreamWorks with like 4 music videos.
What is that, $1 billion?
I think it's $1 million a plus.
Is that $1 trillion?
It's $1.5 trillion. They got a big, nice big deal from DreamWorks, and DreamWorks did a pretty good job on this album.
So listen up, documentary studios, Netflix, Hulu, all of you. Here's a free idea for you motherfuckers, you stupid assholes that won't listen and will keep remaking stuff that doesn't matter. You guys will make fucking Madagascar 7. So this would be...
Wait, is Madagascar DreamWorks?
Doesn't matter. Like all, but I'm talking about like
it
any,
is.
I'm talking about like
it
any,
is.
Any fucking movie or show that comes out. They're like, we have to, you know, they're like, we have to make, you know, the Fresh Prince again.
We
have to do it again. Like nobody has any new good ideas. And they're like, let's put out a documentary about like some fucking like murder. We get it. All of that stuff happens. Here's an idea. This is the perfect documentary for you. It has everything you need for a success story in a band. It has everything you would want. It had a band who got dropped from a label, people that believed in it, that were behind them, Mark and Rama and all of the fans they continuously toured. They put it out, they put out stuff themselves. They kept pursuing as a band. You had people that literally, the band was literal musicians that loved everything, that played all of the stuff on the album. They didn't get famous for their looks. They didn't get famous for being like a fucking one-hit wonder. They got it from being actual band.
I hate to break it to you, but there is a DVD. It's called Jimmy Eat World Believe in what you want.
Yeah, well, guess what? No,
documentary on the history of the band and the road to their breakout album.
Who saw that?
Bleed American.
Yeah, who saw that? Nobody.
I watched parts of it, actually.
Here's another thing. Here's another thing that is awesome about them. From Arizona, obviously. Mm-hmm. And the right time and the right place, which was legitimately like the craziest time in American history as far as I've been alive.
What Morgan is referencing is 9/11. What, what? You want to hear about 9/11?
What is that? Is that TikTok?
Yeah.
No.
Mariah Carey, like one day, just said that on stage, just randomly.
What?
Everybody's like,
what? Fucking nut, dude.
Yeah.
That lady smoked out.
Mariah Carey, 9/11. Mariah Carey randomly brings up 9/11 attacks during her show. Play.
Was she the fucking judge on something that, or which one was the judge that was just like constantly blacked out? There was one of those singers that was just like legitimately blacked out.
Might have been Mariah. I don't know.
But it was awesome. Like every clip I saw of her, she's like, you're a great singer. Like, it's really, I was like, yeah, it's just like fucking rocks.
I don't know. But yeah,
Paula Abdul?
No. Paula's a health queen. 9/11 happened September 11th. This album had come out in July. There was a ban, like a radio ban on a whole bunch of songs.
Like Clear Channel? Was it Clear Channel?
Yeah, it was like Clear Channel. They just thought like people would be triggered by certain songs, some of which were like Chop Suey. It was far reaching. They banned a whole bunch of songs, including a song titled Bleed American, even though they don't say it.
Right. Like I get it. Like I get it. I don't agree with it, but like, get it, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't like
it. I mean, they moved quick. They were like, all right, we'll re-release the album as a self-titled Jimmy Eat World, and we're going to rename the song Salt, Sweat, Sugar. But at that point, they had already been promoting it at radio for 2 months, and they were kind of like, all right, let's move on. Gary Gersh was like, what should we do next?
Who's Gary Gersh?
My old boss.
This is his old boss. Gary Gersh rocks. He's really cool.
Yeah, he's great.
And so is his son, who is in a great band.
So Gary Gersh, my old boss, was picking the second single. He's trying to pick between Sweetness, If You Don't, and The Middle. And he was like, you know what? The Middle would be perfect for America right now. Let's go with The Middle because it's so positive and uplifting. And it's like everything's going to be all right. Like the country was going through a rough time. And Jimmy was there to say, everything. It's gonna be all right. All right.
Was that like Gary Gersh's like his personal like claim to fame? Because I remember you've told me a story where you're like that was his. He really was like really bummed that he didn't choose a single one.
That wasn't Gary. That was their A&R at DreamWorks. I don't think it wasn't Gary. It was a different A&R at DreamWorks. But so the band had, you know, pretty moderate success with the first two singles, Sweetness, Bleed American. And then they were on to The Middle, which was massive. They put out this amazing music video for it, which you know
yeah,
very
I think
well,
some
I'm
of,
sure.
Some of my friends were in it. It was like, you know, they're from Arizona, so it's like...
They cast a bunch like, of yeah. ASU hot people into this music video.
Yeah, the sluttiest school.
Yeah.
It's and the horniest
like,
school.
They were just like, okay, you guys are all just going to hang out and party in your underwear. ASU kids, easy. They got that. They do that on the regular. But the video is actually very literal, which I think is interesting because you don't see that in a lot of music videos. It's like this person shows up to a party fully clothed and everybody else is just in their underwear. And he's kind of like going against the grain. You know, he's like, I am who I am.
Yeah, I didn't know what the song was about. Like, I didn't know what it was about until I like read it. It was about some girl that didn't think she was like punk rock enough.
Yeah, which this 13-year-old girl wrote Jimmy an email and she was like, hey, the punks at my school are fucking assholes. They don't think I'm cool, even though I listen to cool bands like you guys. Like, what the fuck is the deal? And this was sort of Jimmy's response to her. Like, hey, man, like, don't write yourself off yet. You're just in the middle.
A really funny story about The Middle. I was in a band called Table for One,
mm-hmm.
right? And
Table for Glasses?
No, I was in a band called Table for One.
Okay,
so we had a song. We wrote a bunch of songs. Well, the singer wrote all of the songs. The guy wrote all of the songs, and he was relying on this song in particular to be like, you know, the hit song off of the album. This is the album that we went to drive through with.
Okay.
And I got it last night. I got the album last night, and I would like you to listen to this song and tell me what this reminds you of, because I...
Okay.
Wait. Because there's a part in here. Wait, hold on. I think there's like a part that's exactly the middle. Is it this part, right? Wait. Oh, this was also the band that added like just synth to add synth. I think it was the most heavily influenced by... I think this is the middle. It's the middle. Isn't that the... It's like mm-hmm. the same chords and like the same...
Well, I heard it at the very beginning. He was like, don't worry about it or something like
that. Yeah, it's literally like... And I think we kept being like, hey, dude, this is that song. He's like, no, it's completely different.
Yeah, but you know, when you're a teen, like... And you're just trying to make shit, you definitely rip shit off all the time.
Bro, I got so many fucking songs last night. I like sent them all out. Dude, I sent some of these songs to like Will Yip. And I was like, dude.
Why are you wasting Will Yip's time?
I told him, I said, this is either going to make your night really, really bad or really good. Because they're from over 20 years ago. It's really interesting to go back and listen to it. I think it's so fun. Nobody cares. No, there's a, I'm, I play.
I woke up this morning at 6:30 in the morning, and I had 6 demos from you on my.
But it's because they're from 20 years ago, right when this album came out, like literally, or like right around the time when we were recording this, like right when this happened, and I was just like, God damn, dude, like I have been in this for 20 something years, like I've been like
completely
invested into all of this for so long, and like this is, you know, what started me doing this. But that, like, you know, and then I was like reading this and I remembered the Jimmy story, and I was like, damn, everything really ties back a lot to this album.
Yeah, the middle was just such a fucking breakout song for them. It catapulted this band to the fucking stratospheres, and I don't think they've had as big of a song since. You know, they've definitely put out a lot of music since then, and they are still such a huge, huge band in the scene. And I can't think of a band who's had such a long trajectory across like all the waves of emo. Like they're still...
They were the first band to do like consistent emo radio. Like they were the first, like there
it
is.
What does that mean?
So Jimmy Eat World became the first emo act to have significant success on radio and on the charts.
Okay, but that began with this album.
Yeah.
They weren't getting any radio play on Clarity.
No, but this
but the albums before this like don't sound like this, you know, and they weren't working those at radio. They were just touring. And those albums are amazing, but this is a pop album.
By the way, my favorite Jimmy song is the 16-minute one. It's called Goodbye Sky Harbor. Yeah, it's so fucking good. They do some of that stuff on this album, but Mark Trombino made it into something that's like palatable, you know, like a not 16 minutes long. They did a lot of really cool shit on every single song on this album. I forgot who the cover's by, but Jim Adkins, like, it's like some famous photographer, but he thinks he was like basically the pioneer of the color photograph.
Huh.
Yeah. Like it was like he's the pioneer of like color photographs.
Why are CDs like literally the most annoying packaging in the world? Like you can't open it without breaking it somehow.
The thing is, so like some of the things that like Trombino did on the album, like there's like Get It Faster. There's like an intro to that. I didn't know this. I didn't know this at all. Like there's like a minute of like drum fills that were programmed in PlayStation's MTV music generator game.
What?
Yeah, I went back and listened to it this morning. I had That's no idea. Cool. It's awesome. There's so much cool shit Mark Trombino did on this album. He really is like such a fucking baller at producing.
Did you hear the version of the middle that Mark Trombino did?
Yeah, where it's like 80s, it's like wild 80s synth. Yeah, it's like 80s synth, and that's like what got...
I guess they didn't really think much of the song, which is funny because it's like such... It is
it's a simple song
that catapulted them into the stratosphere. But when they were, you know, putting together this group of songs for this album, like Jim thought it was like weak.
Because, dude, if you listen to all their other stuff, it's, like, complicated. And even though, like, it does have, like, a lot of pop elements, it's not this pop. It's too simple for Jimmy Eat World.
Well, he said that was the first time that he realized, like, just because you don't put as much work into something doesn't mean that it's not good. He's like, a good song can come to you, whether it's, like, comes to you in 30 minutes or comes to you over, like, 5 days. It doesn't matter how much effort you put into it to make it good. Like sometimes it's just going to be good.
Yeah, that's why it's hard to schedule like creative meetings, right? It's like sometimes a creative meeting comes to you or a creative thought comes to you when you would least expect it. Sometimes it takes a month to come up with something. And I think that when you work on something that's art and you don't, it doesn't necessarily take a lot of time. I think the artist is like, oh, this is not good because I didn't spend so much time on it. It's a really similar feeling that I know a lot of, like, I get and a lot of artists get. Where if it's like,
you're
if
like,
it's,
I didn't look at this for 5 hours.
It's too simple. Yeah, like, it's
I just
too
typed
simple.
It up and in Photoshop.
And you're like, but that's it. That's the good thing. It doesn't matter. And so I very much understand, and it takes somebody like Mark Trombino and an outside perspective to be like, dude, this is great. Like, this is really cool. And here's why it's cool. Even though you don't think that it is, this is why it's cool.
Did you know that Mike Hem loved this album so much that they tested out Mark Trombino to do Three Cheers?
No, I had no idea.
They ultimately ended up going with Howard Benson. And I don't know if that was like, you know, a label decision or what, but they loved this album. I mean, this, like, we just talked about Under Oath. Under Oath used this album as the blueprint for Boy Brushed Red.
This was my, Clarity was my blueprint, and then this came out, and then I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, this really, Tom, you know who else loved this album? Tom DeLonge. He doesn't get enough credit.
Fast fact, Jimmy Eat World performed at Tom DeLonge's wedding.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You didn't?
No, but he
yeah, he loved them so much.
So
he had
much.
Them play at his fucking wedding.
He literally was like only talked about them. And like every, like all these interviews when this album came out, he was like, this fucking band. Like I can't, but like it's so fucking good, dude.
Let's talk about your standout tracks. What are your favorite ones? I know it's hard and it's okay to pick the singles.
It's really hard. And they're not the singles. I think the song that I listened to maybe the most when this album came out was the Authority song. Like
interesting.
It's actually named after like a John Mellencamp song called like Authority song.
There are an incredible amount of pop culture and music references on this album.
Like American music references. It like when you look at like the name of the title and like what all of the things that he says in this and the reasons why he does some guitar solos, even though they're corny, you know, he knows it's like an ode to some of the music that he really, really loves. And it really captures like that. It like really does feel like an American album.
Well,
after you know
for
all about
9/11,
it. It was, dude, I was like, right time, right place. And I don't really didn't know that was going to happen.
No.
It's just like it was a really, really, really perfect story and a really perfect album to put out at the time.
To go back to the middle for just a second, like there was a quote where Jim was working on the chorus and he was like, what would the boss do in reference to Springsteen, you know? And that is the feeling that you get when you're listening to this. Like, it does feel very Americana. I do have a list of some of the references pop culture references. Also in the Authority song, they reference the Velvet Underground and the Jesus and Mary chain. TJMC, the DJ never has it.
The another thing they do, like the cool, another, I guess my other standout track would be, what was it, Praise Chorus? Is that the
Praise one? Chorus, yeah. That's the one that literally references all of the choruses.
Yeah, it's with Davey from The Promise Ring and what is this? Captain Jazz.
Dave Brink, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's in, and I love The Promise Ring. I love, love, love The Promise Ring. And he has like a lisp. It was a weird thing to put on, you know, like when you listen to The Promise Ring, he's really lispy. But he references his own song in that chorus. That song is like legitimately, it sounds like a happy song. And you listen to it and it's like that, knowing Davey and knowing The Promise Ring, like that song I can listen to and tear up a lot. That's a really beautiful song to me.
Here's the list of all of the lines. Crimson and Clover
is
a song by Tommy James and the Shondells. Our House in the Middle of the Street references Our House by Madness. Why Did We Ever Meet is from The Promise Ring.
Yeah.
Davey sings that line. And Don't Let's Start comes from Don't Let's Start by They Might Be Giants. Why Did We Ever Part is a reference to Why Did We Ever Meet by The Promise Ring. And then Kickstart My Rock and Roll Heart is a reference to Kickstart My Heart by Motley Crue.
And it was not an album only about like relationships. And I think that, you know, in the emo genre, a lot of the stuff was very heavily.
Well, that's like music history.
Yeah.
They're like weaving in music history to a song about like cool choruses and just how much they love music.
And usually I think that it only translates to like musicians, I think. And they did something really special where it translated to everybody. You know, I didn't know a lot of that stuff about this album before I like looked it up and read all of this shit. It just made it so much more impactful. Like this album was already like one of the most impactful albums of my lifetime, and it just made it that much more. It was really an incredible album. There's no bad songs. There's no bad parts. It's a perfect album. And guess what? When it came out, guess what Pitchfork did? Gave it a bad album or bad
review. Why? How?
Dude, because
this album's fucking awesome. This is a no skips, incredible pop album. This is the album that paved the way for Dashboard and for Taking Back Sunday, for fucking everything.
Yeah, but they walked it back, dude. Pitchfork.
They better walked it back. Well, like, you can't. There's no way. That's bullshit.
Yeah, of course. Well, everybody that is a music reviewer is an idiot and bullshit and shouldn't be a job. Sorry. You guys are fucking dumb. It's objective. So that's not a real job. You have a fake job. Any credit. They don't build statues out of critics.
So to wrap up that story, we were talking about this earlier in the office today. I've referenced it before on the podcast. I think that this is, I agree with this A&R, but he said they had, you know, the success of three singles. They had Sweetness, Bleed American, and The Middle. Massive hit from The Middle. And then they're like, where do we go next? They actually ended up going with Praise Chorus, which not a knock on Praise Chorus, but the A&R, I didn't write down his name, but he said, in hindsight, we should have gone with Hear You Me. It was probably the biggest A&R mistake I've ever made. The band worried, how do we be a rock band on tour and then suddenly have a power ballad? But it's one of those records you don't worry about, like Green Day's Time of Your Life. We should have gone with Hear You Me. It would have been a number one song. It would have changed their entire career. And I do not disagree. I think that is 100% accurate.
I agree. I agree with that. Here's the thing. I probably would have gone with the Praise Chorus. Like that's the mistake that I would have made and not looking at it as a whole.
Yeah.
Like I would have been like, this song is just so goddamn good and not.
Like if you think about, you know, those three ripping singles and then you throw that one out there and you win over all the teenage girls and you pair it with that Cinderella story movie, they would be like so much bigger than they are. Not to say that they're not already huge, but they could have been, you know, stratospherically big.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back and listen, like, I mean, I really, really urge everybody to listen to Clarity in full.
So good.
Like, it's so good, and you can, like, hear where they're gonna go. And then the album after, Futures, is, like, in, you know, I think that that's like a lot of my friend's favorite album.
Futures is a really good album. Dude, listening to this and realizing like that it's not auto-tuned.
Dude, it's fucked
I'm
up.
Like,
it's
like, that's crazy.
It's
that
fucked
his
up.
Voice
how,
is
it's
that
fucked
good.
Up. Like, he's a fucked up good musician.
Yeah.
He's a and like, I've always liked them because they were just guys. Like, they're just like literally just guys.
They're just guys.
They're just some guys.
Guys having fun.
They're just guys having fun from Arizona. You know, it's the coolest thing. And I think that, you know, having some of my friends record with Mark Trombino, it like really, I was like in awe of that. It was the first time I ever thought a producer was cool. You know, I knew the name of a producer that I was like, that's fucking awesome that you did that. That moment of listening to that in the car, like I completely forgot how much that changed the trajectory of like what I like. Really cool thing to think about. You know, I remember like how it smelled and how warm it was at night and how we were finally in fucking Steve Zarrilla, my friend Steve Zarrilla is like an older guy that was in all of our bands. And that was the house that like I got on the roof and I looked in the bathroom and I saw Sugar Colt.
It's, dude, it's an incredibly powerful album, like nostalgia wise. Like, I will always associate the middle with my middle school graduation. They made like a slideshow, like in eighth grade, they had a slideshow of photos for the year and they played it at this assembly and they used the middle.
Oh, it was like the time, it was like time of your life, but yeah. You had like the, that was,
and I was
that
like graduating middle school, like you're in the middle. And I will always fucking remember that. And then Hear You Me, like I was listening to it this morning at the gym and I got like kind of fucked up because I remember when I was in college, one of my friend's moms died and we all went to the funeral to support. And we were all like music school kids. And like, I remember seeing him, the kid whose mom died, and my friend Kevin, and they covered this song. Like
at the funeral?
At the funeral. Okay, and it was literally the saddest thing that I've ever seen.
Too sad. Don't do that.
So fucking sad. And listening to that song today, I was like, damn, that was a really heavy moment.
But
it's crazy how it has that power to just take you back to these such specific moments. And I think that is why this album is so good. That's how you know an album is good. Like when you can feel specific moments, like it creates new memories for you almost.
Every single song on this album does that for me. Like every single song on this album does something like that. That was just the most noticeable one that I forgot and like remember. Like I was like, I completely forgot it, and I felt like a fucking superstar because I heard it first. You know, and I just, you know, never hearing anything like that, and I never heard anything like Bleed American before this. I didn't think things could sound like that. I really just didn't think things could sound as awesome as this album.
Well, anything else? Album, if you like this, you might like that. You said Clarity, but
I mean, bands. Like, look, there's like, I think this album draws a lot of influence from a lot of things. I'm going to name a bunch of albums. You know, one of my personal favorites is Mineral, but that sounds a little bit like earlier. It doesn't really sound like this album, but you can tell that they were very influenced by it. It was like, you know, Fugazi. I think,
ooh, yeah, Jimmy loves Fugazi.
It's like one of his like top favorite bands, and you can hear a lot of that in like the riff.
Yes,
the riff part of it. I think in a lot of the choruses, you know, if I had to be like, all right, pick a band that like sounds similar, like a Jawbreaker, again, one of my favorites. That, you know, it kind of is in the line with Jimmy. But then you get like some of the hard, you know, like I think Old at the Drive-In, like the In Casino Out stuff. Yeah. Is like really with like some of the electronic stuff and the drum pattern and the like how long the songs are.
The Promise Ring.
Yeah.
Nothing I mean, Feels Good. Cause that album is fucking awesome. And I didn't get into that until like 2014. I think when we started doing Emo Night, you showed me the Promise Ring and I was like, damn, Promise Ring is that album's fucking awesome.
It's awesome. It's so good. It's really like, it has like a sense of humor about it that I really liked. And then Christy Front Drive.
Mm.
And that, I mean, a lot. Like, I literally, I think that this. album took so many things that I love and put them into one thing and did it different.
I think that's pretty much it for me. You got anything else to add about James?
I don't think so, man. It was really just like a motherfucker of an album.
It's so fun to listen to. Like, it's so fun. No matter how many times you've listened to it, you can always put it on and it always hits.
It might be like, maybe the best album we're going to talk about.
I could see that, for sure.
It might be I don't know if there's going to be another one that is like, does all of it and is this good, so.
All right, motherfucks.
All right, table for one.
All right, table for glasses.
I'm going to should I put all this, the songs on, should I have Cam give all these songs to Cam and have him put them out?
No.
Okay.
All right. stay tuned for our interview with Mark Trombino.
Unless you guys want to listen to a bunch of table for one.
Goodbye.
Bye.
All right, guys. Welcome to the podcast. Mark Trombino, producer, incredible donut maker, and just all around nice guy. We haven't seen Mark in like 10 years. It's been a minute. Mm-hmm. How are you? How are things going?
Things are going okay. Still doing donuts.
One of the we have one of the first pictures that like kind of became like legendary around our emo night like circle between TJ and Babs and I is when we first went to Donut Friend. It's like one of the first like things that we did. We were like, oh my god! Like, I mean, at least for me, meeting you is like, look, I'm gonna do my best to not like spaz out. You know, I have a lot of questions that I have for you. I've been an incredibly big fan of everything that you've done for entire life. Not just the Jimmy World stuff, but you know, you're a big reason why I got into this thing. So you're actually the first person that I ever knew what a producer was. I never really heard the term producer, and before Friends in Tucson were really into you and all of the stuff that you've done. It was really strange. I'm gonna do some way back stories just to give you a little set it up. But
good.
A lot of friends for some reason people from like Bosnia came over to Tucson during the war. There was a lot of Bosnians in Tucson, and they were humongous fans of bands like Rocket from the Crypt and 3 Mile Pilot. And they were the ones that got me into all of that stuff when I was like, you know, maybe 14. And it really like started me down that path. So, I don't know how they knew about it or how they heard about it, but that was like their favorite stuff, man. So you had a humongous Bosnian following. Like I said, you've like mixed and produced and drummed on so literally, you know, my favorite albums, including my favorite album of all time. And like I said, I wish I could talk to you forever about all of those, but this is about Jimmy Eat World Bleed American. And so going into this, did you have an idea in your head about how you wanted the next Jimmy Eat World album to sound after Clarity, or did you have to hear the songs first to get a full picture of what a new record from them would sound like?
I didn't go into it with any sort of preconceived ideas. It was just sort of an organic process where it almost felt like we kind of just rolled into it from after Clarity. We didn't just roll into it, but that's kind of how it felt. Like they'd gotten dropped but they had all these amazing songs and wanted to keep working and keep recording. So that's just kind of what we did. So it was a little bit cart before the horse. We just started recording before we had really had an idea of what the album was going to be.
I mean, and I could be wrong, but like, is Jimmy Eat World the first band that you would say that you produced and wrote and recorded that leaned into like a very loose term, like I'm using this term incredibly loosely, like in the more of a pop sense?
I don't think so, but I can't point to anything else that would counter, you know, what you're saying. I don't really know. I don't feel like it is, but I felt like it, that maybe it was something that was like So I definitely didn't start there for sure. But I feel like there were things, other records that I'd done in between that was kind of starting to go there. You know, I did the Blink 182 record, which was, that was way out of the, my ballpark at the time. And I think that maybe started kind of put me in that trajectory a little bit.
And even some of the rock stuff, you know, it had some of the choruses were, you know, as you know, I don't think that anybody would consider them pop, but like putting them together, I can hear some of the, you know, the more the more catchiness to it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it just, I didn't know, cause it, you know, it came from doing like really, you know, hard stuff to what Clarity and what, Bleed American turned into. And it's just, was that just like a natural progression for you, or was that something that you like were seeking out to do?
It wasn't natural for me. And it never became natural for me. I was never a pop person. So it also wasn't something I was seeking out. That's just what came my way. And I enjoyed it and I tried my best, but I don't know if I was really like the guy, the pop guy ever.
I don't know, man. I think I disagree, but
one of the, you know, fast factoids that gets tossed around about you and this album a lot is, you know, that you were working for free for the first half of this. And I mean, obviously like you had a long standing working relationship with the band prior to this album. You know, reading some of the stories, I read that like at a certain point, people were knocking down the doors of the studio every day saying, play me the new Jimmy record. And, you know, they got into a huge bidding war with six different labels, and A&Rs were just constantly in there. My question for you is like, when did you realize that you had lightning in a bottle with this album? Because it's extremely, you know, special and influential and incredible. When did you sort of know that you really, that you guys really had something super special here?
When we started working, like the middle was the kind of the most obvious pop song. And I was friends with Luke Wood, the guy that eventually signed him, to Geffen or whatever, but like, he was the first person I played this stuff for, and his reaction to the middle surprised me. I got like, to me, it was like, again, I'm not a pop guy. Right. So like, I didn't quite get it the way that other like really serious pop people did. And so he was flipping out about that song, loved it. And I think that's, for me, is what sort of brought my attention to that song. And then his enthusiasm just kind of grew from there. And, we were at the time, like my management at the time was like helping to like get the word out that we were working on this record and kind of shop it around or whatever. And that did help sort of like, build the momentum. It just got people excited about it. And then, yeah, like, you know how it is, like once a few people are excited, it's like everybody just kind of jumps on.
This is, you know, we've done a lot of albums, and this album, I think, has probably been like, I don't speak for myself, but and TJ, I'm speaking for TJ. I think this has been our favorite to talk about, just because there are so many factors that went into its success. And, you know, it's like a really like an underdog story, you know. I know about you fronting like studio time and mixing the middle that made them like it, and putting songs online. And, you know, just it being the time and place in the world that needed it. You know, those stories that made it the success that it is are available and online. But is there anything that doesn't get mentioned that might get looked over when talking about it that made it into what it is that you really like thought? That nobody has ever really mentioned or talked about.
I mean, there's things that I have talked about. I don't know if they're some of the things that you're talking about, but like what I think made that record special was the fact that it was, just the five of us, making it without any studio management, interference or input. It was still like my most like precious recording experience of all time, obviously, because it was just so great to like be working with an incredible band with an incredible bunch of songs and doing it our way at our pace, you know, doing whatever we wanted to do. It was like, you know, I think that happens probably a lot more now. But back then that was kind of unheard of. Well, not unheard of, but it was probably less prevalent than it is now.
In what way? What do you mean?
Like, you know, like basically making a record on your own terms. To me, I feel like that's something that happens all the time now.
Yeah.
And of course it happened back then too, but they weren't on major labels or whatever. So I don't know. For me, that experience of just five people making a record on their own is what made it so great.
Do you have any specific stories from that time that stick out to you in your mind?
No, but if we keep talking, maybe something.
Okay. Well, I mean, this question might actually bring something up in you. Like we do our best to try and understand the album and the time as much as possible, each one we do. And as much as I've listened to this album, I didn't know things like using PlayStation's MTV Music Generator as the opener for drums and Get It Faster. We could pick apart like every single one of these songs for a long time, but you know, for you, like, and really speaking for you, like, what are some of your favorite touches on this album where you personally are just like, oh, hell yeah. Like that I really love, like that thing I really love. That was a different thing that they're like some very known, again, I didn't know all of the references from that are on this album. And there's some very known ones from everything from like, you know, the sound to the lyrics to like even putting a guitar solo where, you know, you might not normally be in a Jimmy Eat World song. But are there any references on this album or inspirations to this album that like might be a little bit more subtle?
I should have like done a little bit more. Like,
dude, all you need to do is like one listen through. And you're like, how often do you listen to, like, how often do you like re-listen to the stuff that you did? Like, when was the last time you threw on Bleed American?
I wouldn't sit and listen to the whole thing like from start to finish, but like, you know, working at Donut Friend, that stuff comes on all the time. So I'm constantly hearing stuff that I've done, which is cool and annoying too.
I mean, yeah, dude, I can imagine.
Do you feel like, you know, this record holds up now when you hear it come on in the store, you know, 20 plus years later?
I think the songs are great. I can't hear it sonically the way that maybe other people do. Things about it, like I would do differently or I wish it sounded different or something like that. But like, so when I hear it comes on, it's like hearing your own voice on a telephone or something. Yeah.
What are some of the things that you might change about this album?
That's a great question.
Could be as specific as like, oh my God, that snare sounds like shit. That guitar is out of tune. Or it could be, you know, something like broader.
I think it's just, you know, I think my maybe style evolved a little bit afterwards. Maybe, you know, I don't know. I there's nothing really in particular that I would change. I just think when it comes on at Donut Friend, it just sounds different than everything around it before and after it. Mm. You know, I think maybe that's great and maybe I should be stoked, but like I hear it, I'm like, it's not as loud or it's not as, you know, hi-fi sounding or it's not as slick or, you know, stuff like that.
I very much understand with like hearing it and comparing it to the things that are around it, but I think you kind of nailed it. Like that is the good thing about it, but since you made it and we're so, you know, human and critical of ourselves, I like understand that thing. You know, there's I tell this story because you said that it's, you know, listening, it's like kind of listening to the sound of your own voice. Like I never listen to these podcasts after we put them out. Like we put them out and we do it. So I don't know if you're going to listen to it, but I definitely wanted to tell you this story because it was, you know, like a very pivotal moment in, I think it was like one of the moments of my life that I remember being like, I want to be in music. And it was maybe like six months or before the album came out, and we were at a like a house party in Tucson, and it was like 3 a.m. and Mike Petticone from The Bled had the Bleed American. He had that song on a CD. I don't know if you gave it to him or where he got it or what happened, how he got his hands on it. But I remember us, like, he was like, you guys got to come out here and listen to this and tell us what it was. And it was just like a bunch of high school kids in like a suburban cul-de-sac at like 3 a.m, like drunk as hell. And he put on Bleed American. And I remember thinking that it was the first time I've ever been blown away by music. Like, it was the first time, and I didn't know who it was at first. I didn't know what it was listening to. I was very, very familiar with Clarity. It's my favorite album of all time, like number one, hands down, favorite album of all time. And so I was so used to how that sounded. And to hear the opening guitar riff to Bleed American in that setting made me, like, I knew, like, something clicked and something changed in me. And I remember us just listening to that song for, you know, 4 times in a row, and then standing outside the car, you know, in like a summer night in Tucson, Arizona. And that was like the real moment where I was like, oh man, I want to be in a band. Like, I just remember that guitar sounding so different than any other guitar I've heard ever.
So that's awesome. I love hearing that. And I'm so jealous because, you know, that's an experience like I'll never get, you know, I'll never hear that record in that way that you got to hear it, you know, that like first listen or whatever. To me, it was like our demos and we, you know, I don't know. Like, it's so cool to be able to like hear the completed thing without any preconceived ideas about what the song is. Yeah,
I understand that, because like with our events and stuff, I try to imagine like, oh, if I just saw the flyer, if I just went to the show and like saw all this stuff, I would be like, this is fantastic, and I wouldn't have any idea like what goes into mm-hmm. to everything behind the scenes.
Yeah,
taking it back to something that you said earlier, just like you said your style evolved with projects that you worked on after this album. How do you think Bleed American influenced your style on everything that you worked on after this?
It wasn't just Bleed American, but Clarity too. I learned so much from Jim. Like, I probably got more out of working with Jim than he got out of working with me. I learned, you know, and I can't, you're going to ask what types of things, and I'm not going to be able to tell you, but like, I just was in awe of that guy. And he was so prolific and so like creative and talented, and that like I definitely left and repeated some of the things that I saw him do on other records that I did. I can't tell you what, I don't know what, but I know that like I left Bleed American and, you know, like with like a little bit more tricks in my bag, you know.
Are there any moments on this album that you can recall really pushing for or fighting for? Were you guys, you know, like you said, just like 5 dudes in a room all on the same page?
Yeah, pretty much. I can't recall any sort of like, I'm sure there had to have been disagreements. We had to have like butted heads on something. I can't recall anything.
Looking back, like, I mean, were you, you know, because it came out at like, you know, like at a time when, you know, it was just such a, came out at a time when everybody needed it. Do you remember like hearing that on the radio for the first time? And have you ever like sat back? Would you ever like, was there ever a moment where you're like, oh my God, I'm a small part of this?
Yeah. Yeah. Like hearing them on the radio, like I'd never, I guess Blink was on the radio. I don't know, but like that was all new to me. And like hearing that and you know, seeing them on MTV or whatever the fuck, like that was just like mind blowing for me. Like, I'd never been a part of something like that before. So it was fucking thrilling and awesome.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's, Yeah, I think that all really doing this album, TJ and I were like pretty giddy going into this. Some of the albums that we go over are we're like, what the fuck are we going to talk about? You know, like what are we like? How are we going to do this and sway it in a way that like, you know, because it's the truth is like we don't like everything that we listen to. And like,
but we're not a review show. We're just doing like deep dives on these albums. So sometimes it's hard to not bring that like opinion in and just like come in and objectively look at an album. But this one was easy and fun. It's like easy to talk about something that is so fucking rad.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, since it's like, you know, like since we're just doing the like talking about it, like what is your favorite track off that album?
Maybe it's changed. Maybe it was something different when you first put it out, and maybe it's different now.
I really love Bleed American because it's the first song that like Sweetness was the first song, but I think Bleed American might have been the first song like after Sweetness that I heard of this bunch of demos, and it's the one that just kind of blew me away. So it's always been my favorite. I think Bleed American.
Out of Jimmy's songs, like what is your favorite song? Like, I mean, like what is could, now since I got you, why don't we do that?
What is my favorite like
Jimmy song? Yeah, Jimmy song of all time.
I think for me, This Is Heaven is one of my favorites. Yeah. And it's because I didn't get it when we were recording it. I mean, I liked it, but that's a song that I didn't get until it was done. And I was like, holy shit, like this might be the best song on the record. And I kind of slept through it most of the time. That sounds bad, but you know, like I didn't quite get it. But there's so much, and that's like there's so much Jim in that song, like all the little piano things and all the like guitar riffs and stuff. Like that's the kind of stuff that I definitely took from him.
Dude, I kind of feel the same way. I've come back around on a lot of Jimmy Eat World songs on first listen where all this like I would skip and then come back and they end up being my favorite. You know, they're such a band that you hear something new every single time you listen to them, and like depends on what's happening in your life and at the time that you listen to them. You know, my favorite song is Goodbye Sky Harbor. Like I think that's like I don't think I've ever heard a cooler song in my entire life.
I had a lot of fun on that one for sure. That was fun.
Dude, seeing him do that live, like watching him do that live and like looping all of that stuff again, probably one of the first times I ever was like, this guy is like a musician, like mm-hmm. like a real musician. It's like, it seems like, I don't know, you know, we've met him a couple times, but it just seems that he just lives and breathes this stuff.
Oh, for sure. Did you ever see them play Goodbye Sky Harbor like back like early on, or just the like sort of like the,
I saw the Clarity tour, like the 10 year reunion. That was when I saw it in full. And I remember I was with my ex-girlfriend. I was trying not to tear up, you know what I mean? Trying to be like cool about shit. And I was like, I thought he was going to like do a shorter version of it. Like, I didn't know how to pull that off live, and like to watch him actually do that live and how many times I've listened to it and how, you know, I have a thing. I love seeing bands where they don't sound perfect live because you can listen to the album and it sounds perfect. And I always really enjoyed that about artists. But that once I saw that album live, it was kind of perfect, and it kind of sounded exactly like the album, but in a way that didn't like bum me out or piss me off. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know. There's something about these guys as musicians that, I don't know, has really stood out to me over all of the stuff. All out of like my, you know, like I said, Clarity is my favorite album of all time for a lot of reasons, you know, like mm-hmm. for a lot of reasons. So,
yeah, the reunion, not the reunion, but the
anniversary.
10 year anniversary tour. Yeah. I was so impressed with them doing songs like Goodbye Sky Harbor. Like I, you know, it's like, it can't be done. Because like before we recorded it, the song, and while we were recording, like they used to play it, it was completely different. The choruses were super loud. It was like kind of flipped or whatever. And of course it was shorter. So I expected them to do that version. But when they busted out the whole thing, it was like really impressive.
Going back to one thing that you said earlier about the way that you hear this album and you can't listen to it, you know, sonically the same way that Morgan or I or like the average fan can, were there any creative decisions that you made that really influenced the overall outcome of the album now that you listen to it now and you're like, yes, like that was something that I fought for or I chose to do on this?
I don't think there's, again, like I'm ill prepared for this, but like I don't think there's anything, any major thing. There's lots of little things that I contributed that I think are important, but you know, maybe go unnoticed, like little sounds that are in there or little rhythmic bits that are in there that kind of, that I'm proud of when I hear, you know, the whole Goodbye Sky Harbor thing too. Like that whole ending, like was, I'm very proud of that. Nothing I can think of that was like where we had, I had to like be heavy handed with something. I can't think of anything.
Out of all of the albums that you've done, like what, you know, like whether like however big it got, like what's the one that you're most like proud of and that you love the most? Like, cause I go back and forth with a lot of your albums, you know, it always depends on like what mood I'm in, but mm-hmm. you know, is there one that really sticks out to you with just ultimately being your, like, that's your solid, that's your favorite one that you've done?
I don't think I have a favorite. I mean, I definitely have ones that, when I was making records, like every record was a new challenge and every record was a new, I learned something new and I was growing every single one. I was learning on the job, you know, like I started making records. I didn't know what I was doing. So the early ones are really, I go back and I listen to them and I'm so stoked on them because I know how I knew nothing mm-hmm. about anything back then and how rad they still sound to me today. Like I still like, you know, it was the fact that I was doing so little probably. I like that. I like when I was working with Knapsack, like I felt like that was the first record where I was actually contributing as a producer, where I was like actually like working with someone on vocals and like trying to push and get something out of them. It was like my first experience as like, yeah, working with someone like that. So I look back on that record as sort of monumental for myself. And I'm proud of that too.
That's really, it's wild to hear. It's cause it's like growing up, like, I mean, I remember everybody trying to make the album, my friends out trying to make things sound like the Drive Like Jehu, like self-titled mm-hmm. album. And like, just the fact that you like, didn't know what you were, you know, like went into it and being like, I don't know. And I think that that's really the beauty of it. Like that really is cool to hear. And to know that like the first time you like really were like, oh, I contributed is with that Knapsack album. Really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I contributed sonically, you know, before that, but with Knapsack, it was the first time I was like, I felt like I was like
pushing or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, what are you listening to? Like, what have you heard some shit lately that you're like, yeah, I love, that's great. Like, what are you listening to lately?
Oh man. I have to go and like, look at some of my like playlists and stuff. I don't know.
Or has there been like an artist like lately that you're like, oh damn, they're good. Like a newer artist that you're like, oh, that's fucking actually pretty sick. Cause I'm hearing a ton that I'm like, oh wow, this is.
There's a lot and it sucks that I can't come, nothing's coming to mind, but there's a lot. Like I think music now, like I've always thought music was awesome. Like I've never, except for the 90s, I didn't like the 90s. There's constantly shit that I hear. Like, you know, I'm like everyone, like just have like Spotify streaming stuff and like the stuff they're spoon feeding me, I fucking love it. Like, well, what are you excited about?
Look, we started to do, we partnered with Insomniac about a year ago and I never listened to electronic music before in my entire life. I just thought it was like all the same stuff. That is about as electronic as I got was the like the ending of Goodbye Sky Harbor, which I thought was like electronic. You know what I mean? And I never understood the culture. I just thought it was the same thing. I never understood that there was like subgenres of subgenres, and just like there is with everything. And there's a lot of electronic stuff lately that I look at and like that I kind of view as like the punk version of like electronic. There's this artist named Brutalismus 3000 that they're from Germany that I'm like really blown away with how cool they are. So I'm trying to get more into electronic and find out where I fit in this whole thing. And, you know, they're like techno, and then there's like other, you know, like that they're like techno. And I never thought I'd be like, I like techno, but they, you know, it is. And I really like resonate with it and understand it. I didn't grow up with it, but I think it's really cool being somebody like my age. I didn't think I was going to find anything new that I liked. I thought I was just like, this is what I like. I'm done. I'm done growing, and I'm done. You know, I like this shit. As far as like, you know, new bands, I like, oh God, I'm really in like the same place as you are. I actually sent Chris from Saves the Day a mix, cause he hasn't listened to like anything new at all in like forever. And so I sent him, I don't know, there's this like, I like this band Julie. I like this band Anxious. I like, I like the new Porter Robinson, which is electronic. I like, let's see, I'm just like looking through stuff. I think Oso is awesome. I like this kid Shrimp. I love No Pressure, even though that those guys hate us. Glitterer, I love. He's the dude from fucking, like Tidal Fight. Like that's kind of like where I'm living in, if we're looking at like, you know, music with not electronic music.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah, and then there's a lot of really great hard stuff, like really great hard stuff. But I don't know, man. I always really end up going back to like what you did, you know. Like I really always end up going back to like what you did, you know, as some way, shape, or form. So it's been, I don't know. I guess like in closing, you know, like you influence that you've had in my life has been like astronomical. And like for, you know, for better or worse, like Emo Night might not have existed without you. And with all the stuff that you've done and inspired, you've changed like thousands of people's lives for the better. So it's been very cool to talk to you and to get to know you over this.
Thank you so much. That's awesome. Thank you.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for joining us on the pod. Is there anything else you want to add about Bleed American or any parting notes?
I'm just flattered and stoked that you guys give a shit about this record. And I'm honored to have been a part of it. It was such a monumental piece of my career. I feel just so lucky to have been a part of it. You know, it was a record that I think I was just so lucky to be a part of it. And I'm stoked that people care and are still talking about it.
Hell yeah. All right.
All right, dude. Well, it's really great to see you. We'll come into the shop sometime.
Yeah, like, please really do.
Yeah.
All right.
Hell yeah.